www.goatybigelfans.com. To the very first episode of the Lagoti Big L Times podcast series, where I get to talk to influential people, politicians, athletes, places, things, and we get to talk about that on our podcast every Tuesday or Monday. We're still figuring that schedule out, and we get to talk to influential people in all of Martin and Davis County in Indiana. Today, we got Christy Risk, who I talked to last week as part of a podcast interview and as part of an interview to talk about our politicians, which is involving with the upcoming election. Christy Risk, who not only is running as a Republican in the 2026 election, is also trying to fight for those not just in the region of Martin County, but in Davies County, but also in the region of DuBois County, where she's been on the line trying to help people who are affected by the Mid-States Corridor crisis. Not only is this huge, Christy talked to me about family, communication, places, and pretty much what she's doing in the State House. Not only is this huge, today is Election Day, and we have a big interview with her today to show you today, because you're going to probably be at the polls and you're probably wondering, who should I elect as the next Senate representative for my county? This might be the answer that does it for you. You might be at work wondering that. You may be a little bit uninformed about what's going on about the election, and we are here to help you out. Remember, this interview was cut for a very unexpected reason due to audio purposes. We were only able to get about 30 minutes. I mean, the whole conversation was about 45 minutes in total. I had no understanding as to why that was actually happening to some of our audio equipment. But we're still getting our feet wet with podcasting. I know I for sure have done podcasting for years, and I have not had anything like this happen. So at the end of this podcast, the end of this interview, we had to cut it at the very end because the audio stopped unexpectedly and we ran into some technical difficulties. So we apologize for that at the very end. But here is our interview with Republican Christy Risk. And we hope, and if you're watching on YouTube or listening on YouTube, make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, The Lagoti Big L Times, or visit our podcast center on the Lagoti Times website at www.lagotetimes.com. Thank you so much. Have a great day and enjoy listening.
Coming up, the first question I had for you is, what are some of the recent talks or recent discussions that have been going on in the State House currently about what's been going on with the Mid-States Corridor?
Well, I mean, recently was the 2025 legislation when they did the amendment on the Bears bill to keep any spending, you know, from large amounts of spending, anything over $250 million, to just be done without having oversight, which I think is good because it's taxpayer money, so it's important to always have, you know, the right eyes on where dollars are going. So that was probably the biggest thing for it. The Mid-State has a lot of different avenues and different, like the RDA and the different the SB 128, mm-hmm. that were all involved in that. And so sometimes, this is the most interesting thing, a lot of people don't realize that there's 1,200 bills that get written every year. So if you think about that, you have an average of 1,200 bills, and whatever percentage of those bills that gets passed, it's kind of hard to pay attention to every single thing, especially if there's, you know, 200-300 pages on some of those bills. So I think sometimes when things happen and they get slipped through, maybe not everybody's aware of what's going on. And that was probably a little bit of the situation with the mid-state. It was quiet. Most people hadn't heard about it. I know when I came to Shoals to do a mobile office for the lieutenant governor and just talk to people about concerns. And what we do in those mobile offices is we just try to be accessible. So maybe somebody has an issue with, well, for example, today I had a gentleman that I was working with, and he's having problems getting his real ID driver's license. So they don't always know who to call or how to do that. So when we go out in the mobile office, then what we do is we're basically bringing the office from the state house to the county. And then people can come in and they can share concerns or thoughts and different things, and we try to help them navigate state government. Well, that time when I came down to do one in Shoals, I walked into a room full of people, which I was not prepared for, because usually we have a few, 5 or 6 people, and then they'll trickle in and out throughout the day. But when there was that many people there and they were all upset and they were like, well, why are you doing this? I was like, well, first of all, I don't know what you're talking about. Second of all, I'm not doing anything. I'm just here to see, you know, if I can help you. And then that's when I really first learned about it. I mean, I'd heard, you know, the word before. I'd heard the words for Mid-State Corridor, but to understand what it was when I came to Shoals that I learned about it.
I knew over time you had gained a lot of knowledge and understanding of the whole Mid-States situation. I knew that was one thing that both Jason McCoy and yourself brought up when you first, when the town hall meeting took place last week. And so what have been maybe some of the things that you have learned, or how have you gained the understanding of not just this project, but also educating and learning from people in the public and bringing that over to the state house about the project?
Right. So when I was there at that Shoals event, there was I had an intern with me who had worked in the state Senate, and we went back and we just started asking questions about it. We had a veteran state policy person in our office, and so I was talking to her about it, and we did some research on it and looked it up and said, well, maybe we need to reach out to these people in this coalition thing, this no mid-state, just kind of hear what is their thoughts. Because after I left Shoals, I didn't have an opinion one way or another. I just said, well, I'll look into it. So then we met with some of those people just to get questions. And I said, well, and it wasn't that I didn't believe them or anything. I was listening to them, but I wanted to hear from the homeowners, the actual people that were going to be affected. So I talked to the lieutenant governor about it, because he is the secretary of ag. And we found out that he had actually just presented an award to one of the farms that was literally going to be affected by that. So we went down there, or he told me, go on down and just go talk to the farmers, go talk to them and see what's going on. So I went down and spent a day meeting with, I think there was 6 different farms that I visited, and videoing where the mid-state would cut through, and then just hearing their story and letting them tell me their story on how did that farm become part of your family, and what do you do here, and how does this affect you, and what happens. And so then I came back to the state house, and I was just one day talking to one of my senator friends and said, have you ever heard of this? And he was like, no. And so then we began to do some research into where did this go back and how did this start and those kind of things. And so I just started talking to other senators who weren't aware of it. And then when we found out that there was a fiscal attached, so that every person in the state, you know, because it will play on your taxpayer dollars, would be, it's not like it's a project that Dubois County wants to do for their county. It's actually a state funded, federally funded project. Then that began to perk some eyebrows. And so people were like, well, let's look into this little, you know, people, senators started saying, let's look into this. And then the some of the representatives heard about it and they started looking into it. So kind of from there, the conversation organically took off of, hey, you know, find out everything you can, let us know.
What have been the difference between not just what's been the difference between talking to farmers about this issue and then trying to talk to normal townsfolks, whether that be in Jasper, Huntingburg, Lagodi, who might not own farms, about this issue? What do you notice as a difference?
Well, so I haven't been down to Jasper to talk to those people. I only focused on the district here. I talked to the people in Du Bois that came to the Shoals meeting and that have been at those roundtable meetings or the town halls they've had. But the Martin County people, the biggest concern that we have there is that I think it's close to at least close to, maybe not exactly, but two-thirds of your county is Crane, it's National Forest, it's State Forest, so you don't have a lot of acreage or mileage to contribute to something like this, because once they do put that highway through, it cuts off, you know, your east from your west, and then you lose more land mass that you could put business in or put homes in, and you're already land strapped. So the biggest concern for, I think, your constituents or your residents of Martin is that, number one, it's taken up more land. Number two, we've got to pay for it, and we've already seen what could happen with 231 if we were to expand that out like it is up in Owen County. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is, what does this do to our landscape, to our ability to do tourism, you know, and it cuts through. And then the biggest thing is that people don't want to pay for it. Our society as a whole is cash strapped. You know, it's inflation is affecting people, affordability. You've got your electric bills. Just everything is straining the blue collar worker right now. Everybody is struggling to make ends meet and going not all people, but you know, a lot of people are paycheck to paycheck. And so you go and you add in another $3 billion that is coming from the government, which is going to be an increase in spending, which we as Republicans are already screaming stop spending, and you want to increase spending, and people are just against that. They have I-69, they've got 231 that could be expanded, and people just don't want to pay the money or have this invasion into their property. And I think it's pretty neat about your county. One of the things I really love, and I don't know why, but for some reason, Martin County has just kind of captured my heart. I really love that county. But the people there, you all look out for one another. I think maybe it's your small town or small community, but it doesn't feel like in some counties that are really spread out, you could have people on the east side of the county that have never met anybody on the west side. But in your county, you all seem to know what you're very connected. And so I think for people that it wasn't necessarily cutting through their property, their thing is, that's my neighbor and I care about my neighbor and I don't want my neighbor, you know, being affected negatively like this. So I see a lot of that, which I think is really cool. You know, you don't see that. A lot of times people are like, well, it doesn't affect me, I don't care. So do whatever you want, just as long as you don't touch me. But Martin County isn't like that. Martin County is like, that's my friend, that's my neighbor, that's my family member, and I don't want them to suffer. It's actually pretty cool. But the biggest thing is, I think, the financial burden, that people don't want the financial burden.
And so at the Mid-States Corridor meeting, I also noticed that collective agreement amongst all the attendees and even people in this county that were not just at the meeting but also in the community, very strong community. Many people commended your efforts in engaging with the leaders of the Stop the Mid-State initiative. And what have been some of your most successful strategies for effectively communicating with both higher leadership and with the voters, not just in Lagodi, but in Indiana?
Well, in the state, I mean, I've been involved for a long time. I mean, I've been up there for different things when they've had opportunity for committees to bring things forward. I research, I listen, I talk to people, I give my opinions, but I don't I'm not hateful. I'm not the person that stands on the rooftop and screams. I always try to reason with people. So, yeah, remember, I'm a county chair, too, and I've been a county chair for several years, and I worked for Suzanne Crouch when she was running for governor. And so I built relationships with people up there. And one of the things I don't do is I don't ever try to force my way. I always try to reason with people. And then I like to listen. So I do a lot of listening, and I learned how to listen early on. And so when you listen, before you form opinion or try to force your opinion, people then are more receptive to hear what you have to say. And so I know most of the senators personally, but I don't try to use that knowledge or relationship to gain things. I try to take them information that's pertinent that can help them make good decisions. So working down, you know, when I met with the leadership down here and continued to ask questions and took information, I never said, hey, I'm going to help you, you know, overcome this or anything. I've never done that. What I said was, give me your information and I will take your information to the people that have the authority to do something with it. Well, the people that have the authority to do something with it know that they can trust me because I've never come and done anything stupid. I've never, you know, tried to force anything. I just bring them information and they make the decisions. So when I bring them stuff, I'm very careful for what I bring, that I don't bring false information, that I don't bring opinions, that I bring concrete stuff. So I just took the information to them and then brought the people that are part of that leadership up to meet with them. And so it wasn't me telling them, hey, this is what's going on. Here, I said, hey, to the senators, I said, you need to talk to the people who are boots on the ground that know what's going on, that have been in this fight for a long time. So I just arranged for them to meet and talk. And then, you know, they were able to bring their information and their evidence up because I'm a networker. Like, I network people. So, for example, you want to do journalism. Well, now from now on, anytime I around people that are doing journalism or stuff, if they are like, hey, I'm looking for somebody, or I will think of you because that's what I do. That's just how I do things. And so I network. So these people needed to talk to the people in power. I had relationships with the people in power, so I facilitated them meeting with them. And then I problem solve. So there's a major problem here. And so what can I do to assist with this problem that's going on with this mid-state and the land grab, the eminent domain grab? So that's how I do things. I don't ever just force. I try to work for productive solutions.
Yes. And so what do you feel about, or how do you feel about the recent decision on Monday for DuBois County Council as they voted to approve the ordinance about the county's withdrawal from the Mid-State Corridor Regional Development Authority? And how do you feel like what are some of the biggest challenges you've noticed with the RDA, and highlight that? How do you highlight that to voters and be transparent with them about it?
Well, so the thing about the RDA, a lot of people don't understand. So there's acronyms for everything. And I think the most important thing for people, and a lot of, sometimes people are like, well, I don't understand how this stops the Mid-State Corridor. How does this stop? So go back before SB 128. To spend the amount of money that they want to spend on something like a project like this, it had to be approved by legislature, right? Because we don't want anybody. And this has nothing to do with Governor Braun. This is anybody. It could be Governor, you know, whoever. It could be Governor Holcomb, or it could be Governor Crouch, or it could be Governor, you know, Mertlitz or whoever. We don't want anybody to have authority, rogue authority, to just spend money. You want the checks and balances. So prior to SB 128, if there was a big project that was coming up, it went through the budget oversight. So it is your appropriations chair in the Senate and your ways and means chair in the House. And so they have oversight. So you've got eyes on it from the Senate, and you've got eyes on that spending from the House. That way, if there's something that flags it and they're like, oh, wait, somebody might be getting their pockets padded, or, you know, this doesn't sound kosher, or this is going to hurt the taxpayers, they can flag it, and then it gets moved through that process. But when they created the SB 128, they bypassed. So they basically took it out of the budget agency's hands and put it into this RDA. So then they didn't have to have the approval from the Ways and Means and the Senate Appropriations Chairs. The ISA went ahead and made that approval. So basically what happened then is you gave that authority on that decision-making to spend that kind of money or pursue the grants. This was a federal grant with matching for the Mid-State Corridor. You took it out of the hand of the legislature and put it into the hands of an agency. And I don't believe we should ever allow – and I'm sure that there are others that I'm not aware of because I don't know everything in government. But when you allow an agency that's not elected officials, so the RDA is not elected people, but they're going to manage billions of dollars in taxpayer money, I don't think that's right, because taxpayers expect to have a voice. And your elected official, your House member or your Senate member, is your voice. But if your House members and your Senate members don't have any say over how the money's being spent, then the taxpayer is left out in the cold, because now your RDA is spending the money however they want without the taxpayers having any say in it. And that's not right. That's not how our republic is set up. We're a representative republic, so our representatives need to be making decisions on how the money's being paid. So for the county to pull out or to vote out, that's commendable. For those people that are elected, because those people are elected in Du Bois County, for those people to hear the voice of their constituents and react in accordance with the majority of their constituents, knowing, you know, that even if the constituents didn't say anything, they should remove themselves from that RDA anyways, because like I said, it's not an elect, those are not elected people to running that. I think that's commendable for them to listen to the constituents and do that. And I think that's exactly what the grassroots wants. They want to have influence. They want to be able to move the needle, and they did.
Yes. And so what have been some of the efforts? I know you talked a little bit about the State House in the beginning of our conversation, them not even understanding what the Mid-State Corridor was. So how have you and your constituents tried to make the Mid-State Corridor a more top issue or that needs to be addressed in the State House?
Well, I mean, we made phone calls. We had meetings. We took information up. I know they were on radio talking about it. They emailed, they had like an email campaign or something that went on. The lieutenant governor came down to Shoals and spoke with Lagoda. You know, we went to Shoals for a roundtable. Then he met with the people, the council, the county council in Lagoda and the mayor and talked to them about it. And then he went back and he talked to the governor about it actually that evening. So just raising awareness, because I think when you're fighting it locally, that's good. But if it's something this big, you've got to expand your tent stakes a little bit. And so they did. And then once they began talking to people at the state, then other people that I didn't even know were involved started asking questions. And so I think taking it, moving it from local to the state was the advantage I gave them. They wouldn't have had that until I met with them. And that's what happened. That's why I think that mobile office in Shoals was providential, because I think when that opportunity met and I just listened, like I wasn't like, oh, well, this is bad, we're going to do this, that, and the other. I just listened. And then I carried their voice to the State House, which is exactly what I would do if I was a senator. And you listen to your people and you carry their voice with you.
So that's a great point, because you mentioned that you have really good, effective listening skills. Where did you, as you're a congresswoman, where did you or how did you over time develop that listening tool to always make people make their decisions, and you just listen to them and fight for their rights?
Well, that's an interesting concept, because listening, you know, my mom would always say, you have two ears and one mouth. You need to listen more and talk less. And so I think that's kind of where it started, was with her. My mom lived to be 92, and for much of my life, I always thought I had the answer.